BeCure Laser is now available in the UK. To get your very special offer right now, just call 0808 501 5122.
Grief is the conversation that no one wants, but everyone will need at some point in their life. Losing my youngest son, Murray, in 2019, as he had just turned 22 years old, has been and is the single most challenging thing I have ever faced. And the guests on the Good Grief Conversation help me with that challenge every day, and they make the journey just that little bit easier. I hope that the open and honest conversation you will hear will help you too. Welcome to the Good Grief Conversation, here on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Janet Jones. And welcome back to the Good Grief Conversation. It is now part two of our Christmas special, because yes, we are just a few weeks away from facing Christmas, and for some people this Christmas will be a challenging one. Today I am speaking with Julie Foster. Now, Julie was widowed 5 years ago, and in this conversation she openly and honestly speaks about her experience, about her first Christmas, and about her journey ever since. And it has been quite a journey. So I hope that you're enjoying these Christmas specials and that they are helping you and helping you to prepare and face Christmas in the best way that you possibly can. So it's a great conversation. I hope you're sitting comfortably wherever you are. And it's my pleasure to introduce my guest, Julie Foster. Good morning, Julie. Welcome to the Good Grief Conversation.
Good morning, Janet. I'm just excited to be here.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to speak with you as well because, well, first of all, we're touching on a subject that I, A, have no experience about, but also I know that it's a very important subject to be speaking about. And I'm really glad that you would join me and enter into that conversation that we're about to embark on. But also, we actually haven't spoken yet. And I always find that the best conversations are actually off air when I'm getting to know people. So I want to bring this to my listeners. That is literally, this is the conversation straight off the mark between you and me, which I'm really keen to get into.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because I've said to you, I've been invited on things similar to this before. And nearly always there's preparation and questions agreed that are going to be asked and things, because I said to you, and then I thought, well, no, it's a conversation. So we don't need all that, do we? Which feels really lovely, actually.
Yeah. Did you get your cup of tea sorted?
I did. I have a cup of tea here.
Good. Yeah. And I've got my cup of tea too. So let's dive in then. Okay. So we've got the next sort of 40, 45 minutes to chat about. And also we did say that, you know, if this conversation goes over, we will continue speaking in the podcast extras, and I'll tell you more about the podcast extras later. But like I say, important topic, and this is about widows, and specifically widows kind of at Christmas time, of which we are approaching. We're now just a few weeks away. So just give me a little bit of your background, Julie, and what happened to you.
Yeah, sure. I have a background, just to contextualise, in personal development. So for years and years and years, I have studied psychology, how your mind works, how people behave. I tell you that because that's been an enormous help to me when in 2015, I had what I call my volcano of events. Because it was around about November, the end of November, I had decided to take redundancy from my corporate role in the police service. I've been there 15 years. And it was time to leave, and they offered me it, and I thought, well, I'll go. My husband and I had been talking about semi-retirement, so we were in our early 60s, so we thought, right, I'll take redundancy. He was going to go semi-retired in his own decorating business, and we had all these wonderful plans, as you do. So I took redundancy. That same week, our youngest child, my son, left home to go and live with his lovely fiance and their new baby. And it was all starting to feel like a real new beginning and endings of things. But of course, endings of things always lead to new beginnings. Then I joined the gym and thought, right, that's another thing I'm going to do. Use my time, get fit. So I was actually at the gym with our middle daughter and we'd just finished and we were having lunch and I got a phone call. So I say I've been in the police service and I'd only just left. So this phone call was a, hello, is that Julie Foster? Yes, it is. Oh, hello, this is Sergeant Blah-de-Blah from Bedford. And immediately I said, oh, I said, I'm sorry, they've given you my phone number and I'm not in service anymore. I actually retired last week. And then there was this pause. And you know when you just intuitively know? And I thought, oh, this isn't work. You know, this is something personal. So he then said to me that my husband had collapsed at work, actually decorating in one of my friend's houses, and that he wasn't in a good way. Well, he'd had a heart attack 5 years before, so he was on medication. So I took myself back to that time and thought, oh, it'll be okay. You know, they'll give him some treatment and then he'll be fine. So he said, well, I'll keep you posted. I said, do I need to come there? He said, no. He said, just stay there and I'll keep you posted. Phone call about another 10 minutes later. He said, well, just to let you know that the air ambulance is on its way. And because when you get all these little bits of information, your mind is processing. And it's the fear, I felt the fear building in me because I could feel this was getting a little bit out of what I expected out of control, I suppose. It felt like it was running away with me. My daughter and I decided we couldn't eat lunch, that we would go to get in our separate cars and go home to my house just to be ready for whatever, to travel to the hospital. That's what we were thinking. So we're just going to get in the car. And I got a phone call from the air ambulance doctor who said to me in no uncertain terms, because why would you, you know, you can't dress it up. He was very nice and very compassionate, but basically his message was that they couldn't do anything. And I just fell on the floor in the car park. And then my daughter sort of knew. She was also, you know, very, very upset. And it was just like, you know, they say the ground is taken from under you. That's just what it felt like. I thought there's nothing here. I just, you know, my legs actually just physically didn't work. And which obviously, you know, it's the shock and everything. You know, that was how the news came to me, if you like.
And it really does. It rips the rug from under your feet. So everything that you had been thinking and you had been planning and you could see, and they always say, you know, have something to look forward to in life. And all of that then just gets removed, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, it's one of those times when in my work, I try to help people very much to live in the moment. But boy, that was a moment, you know, a real moment where you're absolutely present in that moment and there's nothing else. It all felt and still feels surreal. You know, like at the time it was like, well, this isn't happening really. You know, that's what sort of surreal means, isn't it? You know, that it isn't really happening because your mind just isn't in a place to accept. It got a shock awareness of something, but it's not moved into the acceptance of it. You know, in that electric shock, for me, shock means, you know, like lots of electricity. And that where that moment and time did stand still. When I think back, I don't know how long I was sat on the floor. I don't know. I have no concept of time at all.
And maybe it doesn't exist in those moments, you know, for you as an individual. It's not relevant, is it?
No, it isn't. But it's a structure and a construct that we live in, time, space, reality. So suddenly to feel like you're outside of that, it's a very strange, very strange feeling. Yeah. But I do have a little funny story about the car park, though, because life is not all, you know, this doom and gloom. It's just reality. But I looked across to my daughter, who's in her late 20s, early 30s. You know, she's not a child. And this man appeared from nowhere. I really didn't see where he came from. And suddenly he was hugging my daughter. And I remember thinking, who are you? you're hugging my perfect stranger, hugging my daughter. So I got a bit sort of offensive, but I was curious. So anyway, I stood up and went over to her and I said, are you all right, Michelle? And you've got this kind of strange man coming. She said, no, Mum, he's one of my friends. He just happened to have been in the car park. But again, just like, I don't know, just a crazy moment, really, in thinking, what's going on? That was the general, what's going on? Yeah.
And that's it, isn't it? Because you no longer then know what's going on, because what was going on has just all ended. And very abruptly. So now, and I did notice it's about 5 years ago that this happened.
Yes, it's the 4th of December.
Okay, so you're coming up to the 5th anniversary. So 5 years on, you're in a very different space. Life has definitely changed. I do want to talk about those 5 years. I want to talk about the Christmases, as that's the, you know, the theme, and your journey. How do you get from there to here? So let's go back to those 5 years. You've been given the news, your life has fallen apart, and you are 21 days away from Christmas.
Exactly. And I was talking to my eldest daughter today. She was here for a cup of tea this morning. And we were talking about how strange that month was, because it was a real mixture of practical things to do. So, you know, we had to get him moved. He got taken to Luton and Dunstable, which isn't where we live. We live in Stevenage, so we had to be transported back here. So, you know, funeral directors and then a funeral to organise and flowers and a wake and all the practical lists that you have. And how we got through that was, we're a very close-knit family and I'm very, very fortunate that we built that together. And we did everything together. So seven of us went to order the flowers, you know, like, four of us went into the funeral directors. Three of us went to the registrar. I didn't do anything on my own. So it was fabulous to have them. And also important for, we have three children. So also important for all of them to feel, I think, part of that, be involved in that. Because doing the practical things is very important when you've got all the other emotions that you're kind of dealing with. It's sort of moments when you can just get on and do that. Well, for me, it was.
I also think that, you know, arranging all of that is still you doing something for that person. You've to make it the best it can be. It's only happening once. And that's why my heart goes out to anybody who's dealing with that during this COVID. It really does. Because
I can't imagine.
Because it is a celebration of people's lives, no matter how they die or how old or young or whatever, the lives are a celebration, you know. So there's an element of joy in that dark space at the same time, which is the weirdest thing.
I absolutely agree with you. And every element of that journey was so important to make it about Kevin. That's my husband's name, was Kevin. So he loved the outdoors. So we did everything to reflect the countryside in his service, you know, from flowers that we chose to the coffin that we chose to the songs that we sang. It was like, and it was all in honour, you know, to honour what he would have loved. But I am also a spiritualist. So I have certain beliefs about when souls pass and what happens to them. So for me, that all happened in the first 3 or 4 days after his death. And I did certain things and practices, which I believe in with people that I practice with, that were all about letting him go on his soul journey and letting him go, because that's a big part of our what we can do for our loved ones is to actually let them go.
Yeah, tell me more about that then.
Okay, well, we believe the soul passes within 3 to 4 days of physical death. So we hold a ceremony, which is to allow that soul to pass, which is a very quiet affair. There's only, I think there's 4 or 5 of us at my particular service.
And did you do that in your home or where did you do that?
Yeah, I have a sanctuary in my house, but I went to a friend of mine who also has a sanctuary and we did it at her house. She was my spiritual mentor for years. She also has passed now, but was in her 80s and an amazing, amazing woman who taught me so much. But it was beautiful and I meditate regularly and I visualise things. That's what I am able to do. And in my visualisation, our eldest daughter, Lindsay, had lost a little boy some years ago who they named William. And in this visualization that I had, Kevin was in a sort of air balloon, beautiful colors, like rainbow colors. And this balloon kind of went off, and, you know, in the service, it's like, I'm letting him go in this balloon, and off he's going. And he's waving and he's smiling, and it was joyous, actually. It was really lovely. And then I could see in the basket, you know, like a balloon basket, this little hand that was, you know, like a child. And I felt like it was lovely, because I felt like William had come to get him.
Go for it. You're in the good grief conversation.
But it was, that comforts me strangely now. And at the time it did, to think they're still up there somewhere, or off somewhere in their air balloon. Having fun. Oh, goodness, always here, always.
All surrounding you.
That felt very comforting for me to do that in the service. So by the time we went to the, you know, what we all understand as a funeral, there is something to do, and very much a celebration. And my spiritual minister actually did the service. The congregation were just blown away by the way that kind of service is taken, which is very different from most funerals anybody's been to.
But just describe it though, Julie, because, you know, there are so many different ways that people kind of do things at this time. I just think it's great to share them, because you never know who's listening, who finds peace or creates a different approach based on what you've shared, you know?
Yeah, and I do think it's good to have options, because, you know, and anyone that's been through this will know, not only are you in this surreal state, you kind of can get taken over by other people and what society would have you do, you know. And I think it's really important, because, as you said, we do this once. You have your options. You have your right to speak up. You have your voice. And I think we need to remember to use that and vocalize what we desire. Sometimes people are shut down a little bit, which is understandable, but it's good if you can find the strength to actually say and do what you'd like to do. So the service, really, I mean, the differences are quite stark for some people. But for me, my minister met me outside the crematorium. We did everything in the chapel in the crematorium. And he just held my hands and said, you do know who's here, don't you? And I was like, I could think of a million things. We follow the teachings of a particular spirit, and that spirit's name is White Eagle. So he said, well, White Eagle is standing with you. And just that, for me, I thought, okay, you know, I can do this. It's time. Gather yourself like you have to. I wrote Kevin's story, if you like, his life story from my perspective, and how we'd shared that life and things we'd done, and funny little anecdotes about him as a little boy. He was very mischievous and often found playing on the fire engines at the end of his street. His mum had to go and get him, and all that stuff. That's like, it's funny, isn't it? Kind of, because it's who he was, you know. He wasn't always the 62-year-old person. And it's nice to give an insight, isn't it? And the whole service was around love.
Because that's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Everything in life is about love. And when we veer away from that, it's when we get into trouble, I think.
I couldn't agree more.
So that was really, you know, you said explain it and describe it. I sang, because I like singing. And we had our own sort of special song, if you like. So I sang that. I don't know how I sang that.
No, I was going to ask that.
But it's, I don't know, there's something about, again, it goes back to maybe the honouring. That's what I wanted to do. So it becomes important to do.
Because you're doing it for someone else. I think at that point, you're so busy thinking about the person you love that you don't really think too much about yourself in all of that. And that comes back to the love bit, because that's really what love is, isn't it? The ability to think of others more than yourself.
Yeah, absolutely it is. After singing, and I just allowed myself to actually sink into the support of our son, physically and just emotionally. I just sort of thought, oh, I'll just be here, you know. And I think it was intuitive. It was just to do. But it actually was really important for him to be able to do that, because everyone has a role in this you know, or a place, or they've got their own place. And it's the dynamics that are interesting in how it all comes together and how you all respect each other's place, or how you don't know about the other person's place either.
Yeah, and it doesn't always throw up all good stuff either. You know, I'm having a call later with a psychotherapist, and we're going to be talking about, you know, all that kind of thing. And as much as death in itself, it reveals so much about people, about the person who's gone, about the people who are around. Like, you have all these layers stripped away from you, and suddenly, you know, you are there. So let's move on to the Christmas bit, because by then, by the time you've done the funeral, you're not very far away from Christmas.
No, you're not. And Christmas was, I probably had got some presents by then, but I'm a bit of a last minute shopper. So I don't really remember shopping, but everybody ended up with something. And our middle daughter, Michelle, and her husband, Ross, are the greatest hosts in our family, and they have the biggest dining room. So inevitably, we do a big family Christmas at their house. And so it was this year. It was planned that we would do that on Christmas Day.
Yeah, something happened.
I want to say something about the way we follow what we've always done, in part what society expects us to do, and the fact that breaking away from any of that is just, we just go along with these things. So anyway, we were at Michelle's house. We do our routine Christmas days. All arrive, mad, crazy present giving. Then it all calms down a little bit. Normally the guys go off to the pub for a few pints. So some people stay, cook dinner, look after the kids, get the games sorted, all that stuff. And then we eat all together. And that's kind of how it went. And then we sat down to dinner and my son wasn't in the room. And I thought, where is he? And I went to find him. He just was angry. And I think this is what you have to recognise, is that people's emotions, and I deal with this in my coaching work around the energies and the emotions we get into. His response was anger to everything, really.
Which is normal also. You know, it's normal in grief.
Of course it is. Absolutely. It's part of the cycle, isn't it? You know, that you go through. But his anger really was not around what it presented as. It was anger that his dad wasn't there. But it was like, how can you all sit in there? How can you all sit there and have dinner? Why are we doing this? Why are we having this normal kind of day when it's anything but normal, you know? And he wasn't able to eat. And so he went off for a walk for a couple of hours and came back. But I think he was probably the only one that really expressed how we were probably feeling, to be honest.
So you think that everyone else would just go in along because that is what's expected. And, you know, you've got kids as well and they have expectations.
Exactly. And I heard every one of us say that, you know, well, it's for the children, you know, the children, it's not fair that they don't understand. And, you know, there's la la la. And so it's interesting, just interesting how we all went along with that. Whether other people have done that and had the same experience, I don't know, but that's what we did. But we got through, you know, there were some pleasant times, and, you know, we did laugh. And I know you'll probably know this, you know, that when you find yourself laughing, it's like, yeah, you can, it's a bit of a surprise. And then you can let that, you know, that little voice in your head, the one that's guilty, rule bound, what would people expect, judgmental, all that, you know, will come in, won't it? And sort of speak to you as to what you're doing, laughing, you know, how can you be laughing? You know, you have to learn to laugh, have to allow yourself to have a whole range of emotions to survive. You know, it's imperative that you do.
I completely agree. And I do think at this time, you know, when we have these kind of things that happen in our life, you know, the humour is a little bit warped in a way. I remember when my dad died, and my dad took his own life back in 1994, my very first big tragedy. But I remember doing my mum's hair on the day of his funeral, because I'm a hairdresser in my past life, and I was doing my mum's hair. And I was like, do you know what? If dad was here now, I'd kill him. So we both started to laugh at that. I was like, yeah, he's not going to get out of this one alive, is he? We'd just been and buried him. So on the way there, my brothers and sisters and my mom, we were behind the coffin. And then coming back, I just said, oh my God, where's the coffin gone? Where's dad gone? And my brother went, we've just buried him. It's like, where have you been? And so that also made us all laugh as well. But unless you're in that environment, you can't imagine how that might be funny. But some strange way, humour does creep into this.
It does. And it's a real lifesaver. It really is. I remember when the hearse came here, sort of drew up outside and out the car, and because Kevin had gone to work and never came home. So that was, you know, what happened. So I remember going to the car and actually touching. We had a lovely wicker coffin for him, and I remember touching it, looking at the flowers. But actually what I said is, oh, now you come home. And that's the same sort of ironic comedy thing. It's like, I said, now you're home, you know.
At least I know where you're always going to be.
Yeah.
But just going back to your first Christmas, in hindsight, is there anything that you would change, that you would think, actually, we could have done X, that would have been better? Because there are people listening who have maybe just lost somebody and they are now faced with that first Christmas. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, with hindsight, it's a great thing, isn't it? Probably would have talked about the elephant in the room a bit more, a bit before the actual day of Christmas.
And you would have talked about that to say, what would you all like to do regarding your dad on Christmas Day? Would you be as clear as that? Or
no, I think I would have asked, probably had a conversation about how we all felt about it. Because, you know, the structure was there, it was all organised, it was arranged, but how did people feel about that? And I do, yeah. It's a good question, actually, Janet. Was that I would have perhaps encouraged some more conversation before Christmas Day so that we could express. I found there's a lot of everybody wanting to protect everybody else. It's because, you know, you're hurt anyway. And, you know, expressing your truth sometimes can hurt other people.
It can. And also, I guess it's such a paradoxical day. It's a day when you watch the media and you watch the films and everything has a happy ending. But you know, you just think, yeah, but my life right now doesn't have a happy ending. We're so programmed that that is the expectation. But yet that's not reality. Reality is this. Reality is people die, and there will be Christmases for all of us where certain people are not there. And we need to get our heads and hearts around that.
And I think, you know, what you're doing here is great. And I've had some chance to help some people in a similar situation, because I agree with you totally about the programming and the conditioning. We're so conditioned to act, you know, in a certain way in certain circumstances.
But don't you think that we're conditioned that we should always be smiley and happy? And if you're not, you know, there are people who say, oh, but you should be grateful for what you've got. And well, I get that. But right now, my heart's broken, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, give me time. I might get there. And I think sort of going forward, that is what I've done. The first year after that Christmas, that was a funny period. And there'd been a lot of attention before Christmas and at Christmas and, you know, even up to the new year. And then after that, which I guess might be the same for anybody that's a widow or been bereaved in any way, is that life for most people then just ticks along and it gets back to whatever their normal is. So it felt to me like there was this peak of frenzied activity and attention, and then after the new year it was just like tumbleweed, just what do I do now then? And no one means to do that. I had really good friends, and my family, as I say, are very close, so we kept in contact. But it was the first time I sort of really felt the void. I thought, well, this is it now.
The void, that's where you live. You live in a void.
This is my morning, this is my go to bed time. This is my empty house, because my son had just left home. So it was like me and the cat.
Yes. And that woman. I'm cat woman.
And because I'd left work. So I had very little structure in my day, in my life, really. So I decided to have a year of saying yes to things, to invites, to opportunities, to exploring myself, to find the new me. Because suddenly, you know, I'd been a wife for 42 years and suddenly I wasn't. I'd been a partner, parent for all those years and suddenly I wasn't. So I'm a single woman. I'm a single parent. I don't have a corporate go-to-work job anymore. I'm self-employed. So my identity, my identities, you know, and that's the work I do with my clients, is stepping in because of my own experience. Stepping into a new identity requires study and practice to do that. So I actually had the worst and the best year of my life, actually.
And that's amazing that that happens that first year for you, because you know, many people sit in that void wondering what on earth to do for a very long time and can often just stay there until they die. And, you know, that's not unusual for that to happen. So for you to have that year, and I think really brave of you to go for the saying yes to things straight away, because there is a numbness to life. So I'm guessing, you know, we've talked about spirituality and your practice. I wonder how much that actually, well, propelled you even.
I think it influenced me. So I think having faith really was important for me. You know, referred to it earlier, knowing my belief system is that I talk to Kevin every day. He's here all the time. He's here with me. I just can't see him in the physical. My belief is that it's all energy and that he's here, but I just don't see him at the moment. So that helped. And also my underlying years and years and years of belief around what I believe I create. If you live life that way, which is what I try to do, it's always so important for anyone that's here to know that even though I might be sounding like, oh, it was all right, but oh my God, I had duvet days and I allowed them. I just allowed myself to have one of those really, you know, like the messy crying, complete mess, you know, and 2 days is kind of like how much I would allow myself. And then I would start to think, right, I've had enough now. And I used to get that question, I've had enough. I don't want to feel like that anymore.
And I think you're right. There comes a point you go, I need to park that. It's like, it's not that you don't feel like that anymore. It's that actually, I need a breather. I need to park it. And the fact that you can, and even in deep grief, you can actually say, I'll come back to you. You know, I remember having sort of different personalities, if you will, for dealing with certain things. I can remember being in the car on the motorway.
So funny that happened to me.
And I could feel myself getting overwhelmed with emotion. It's like, nope, I need brave Jan now because I'm behind the wheel of a car. And I would literally summon brave Jan in. And it's like, come on, you know.
And that's really useful, I think, to have these identities. I call them the hats, you know, I put different hats.
I saw that on your Facebook, yes.
Yeah, you know, like when I'm here in my studio and I'm working, I have my work hat on, you know, metaphorically. And sometimes, yeah, you can have your cap of sorrow, if you like. And it's okay to be completely indulgent and let that be. And I also have learned that grief is not linear at all. It's a spiral. Any one point, you know, I can be here and then I can be down here, like up and down, or around, wherever you want to see that. Because to think, you know, you hear people say, don't you, you'll get over it. Or there's no get over it. There's no get through it. There's just living with it. It's living with it.
Well, I call it transitioning, because you now find yourself in a brand new place of life. And there is a transition period to that next phase. And even the next phase, everything's growth, isn't it? So we're always growing through life.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of that first year for me, and it still carries on, you know, but there's always like the first time you do something. So there's a lot of initiations in that year. Really, we weren't great travellers. We'd had holidays and things, but I had never got on a plane on my own. So in the January, my friend who lives in Northern Ireland, Jerry, she lives in beautiful Donegal, and she said, do you want to come and stay? And we both walk, we're walkers. So she said, beautiful walks. And we'll go. So I said, yes. And just that journey, just all of it, just from the moment of only having one passport, you know, instead of having the two in the wallet, just everything is a little thing, but it's not. It feels very different. And you think, oh, okay, so isn't it going through the airport sitting on the plane, you know, just all of it was an initiation in being a single traveller.
We've only got a few minutes left. We are clearly going to be going into podcast extras. So we're going to wrap up with the airport thing. But for anybody who is listening and you would like to join us in the podcast extras, just go to www.thegoodgriefconversation.com and click on join podcast extras and you'll find this podcast in there. So let's just go back to the airport there, because there's always two ways that you can go in every situation. So somebody who then is lining up and they've, you know, showing their passport, that moment could bring them down and just think, oh, it hurts so much not having the two passports, for instance. So what's your thought process of your experience? What was that? And then we're going to hoof it over to podcast extras.
Okay. You know, there's a great saying that says, how you do anything is how you do everything. And I see that in my own life. How I do a lot of things is quite impetuously. I'm quite an adventurer. I'm an explorer. I dive in and I experience it. So my approach was, this is exciting. This is my first trip on my own. I'm going to witness this as I've never witnessed traveling before. What will I learn? What will I do? What opportunities will I have? I spoke to people. I spoke to other travelers and heard their stories. And it was beautiful, actually, in unraveling it. But my approach was from that aspect. So I noticed it was different. But I was able to say, okay, it's different. So let's see then. Let's see what unveils. Let's see what unravels. So, yeah, and scattered with saddish feelings. But predominantly, it was like, this is an adventure, Julie. So off you go.
Yeah. And with the sadness, it's always going to be there. I mean, I discovered that you can actually be happy and sad in the same moment. That was a revelation for me. You know, that is actually possible. And maybe that was that initial journey, wasn't it?
I think so. It's a bit like a window. It's beautiful. It's glass. You can see through it. If you can see something, you can see the sky, and it's raining on the window. But it doesn't take away the beauty of what I can see through the window, but it obscures it sometimes.
That's a lovely philosophy. Right, we're going to take that philosophy. We're going to head over to podcast extras because this is a really lovely conversation. And I also know, you know, in these 5 years, you have done amazing things and you now live on a very foxy life. And so, you know, I want us to talk about that as well, because there is joy in what is perceived as the worst thing that can happen, and there is always nuggets of joy and love, and these things they're important to talk about, and so that we don't get caught up in that downward slide. So come on, let's go over to podcast extras. Thanks a lot, Julie. I'll see you over there.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. I knew that was going to be a long conversation. So we did continue talking over on the podcast extras and discussing more about the journey after grief and how to move on to live a fun, inspiring, and in Julie's words, foxy life. So do go and join us over on the podcast extras. And to do that, you just go to www.thegoodgriefconversation.com, and also when you get over there, you will have the opportunity to support our show so that we can keep this conversation going and growing, because it is an inspiring conversation and grief is something that will happen to everybody on some level throughout their life. So it's great to have the conversation open and ready for when people need it. So that is www.thegoodgriefconversation.com. Come and join our world. Of course, you can do all of that on social media too. On Facebook, we are facebook.com /thegoodgriefconversation. And that is the same with Instagram as well. So do come and join us and join the conversation too. So it's been wonderful talking to Julie. She was a really inspiring guest. If you would like to connect with Julie, then you can find her website at juliefoster.co.uk. Of course, that's the three W's in front of that. And also in the podcast extras, as well as the extra conversation, Julie's gift is an MP3, so an audio file that you can listen to at any time and as many times as you like. And it's called the Fun Seeking Tutorial. So if you find yourself where you feel that you've been in kind of a dark place for quite long enough, and you think, you know, it's time to do something about it, then Julie's audio is a place to start. And I'm sure you'll love it, because she's great to listen to and she's got a lot of really good information to talk about. So that's it for this week. And next week, that will be part three of our Christmas special. And next week, I'm talking to psychologist Silva Nevis. And he was my guest quite early on as well. So we're going to be talking about Christmas, the elephant in the room, and some ideas of how we can embrace our loved ones at this challenging and quite emotional time of year. So I hope you'll join me with that. I'm sure it's very inspiring, and we'll have some great things for you to listen to and pick up, and hopefully help you with your Christmas planning and how you're going to deal with things too. So I am your host, I'm Janet Jones, and it's been my absolute pleasure to bring Julie to you and have this great conversation. Until next week, you take great care of yourself, stay safe, stay happy, and I will speak to you very soon. Bye for now.